All right, Psalm 39. To the chief musician, to Jeduthun, a psalm of David. I said, I will guard my ways, lest I sin with my tongue. I will restrain my mouth with a muzzle while the wicked are before me. I was mute with silence. I held my peace even from good, and my sorrow was stirred up. My heart was hot within me. While I was musing, the fire burned. Then I spoke with my tongue. Lord, make me to know my end, and what is the measure of my days, that I may know how frail I am. Indeed, you have made my days as handbreadths, and my age is nothing before you. Certainly, every man at his best state is but vapor. Selah. Surely, every man walks about like a shadow. Surely, they busy themselves in vain. He heaps up riches and does not know who will gather them. And now, O Lord, what do I wait for? My hope is in you. Deliver me from all my transgressions. Do not make me the reproach of the foolish. I was mute. I did not open my mouth because it was you who did it. Remove your plague from me. I'm consumed by the blow of your hand. When with rebukes you correct man for iniquity, you make his beauty melt away like a moth. Surely, every man is vapor. Selah. Hear my prayer, O Lord, and give ear to my cry. Do not be silent at my tears, for I am a stranger with you, a sojourner, as all my fathers were. Remove your gaze from me, that I may regain strength before I go away and am no more. This morning we studied the 23rd Psalm, a psalm that we're all very familiar with, a psalm that is on a lot of plaques, you know, around in people's houses. It's often read at, you know, it's read in weddings, it's read at funerals, it's memorized sometimes by little kids. I've got a feeling that probably this psalm isn't on quite as many plaques. This psalm is probably not usually on the memory verse list when you're a kid. Unlike the 23rd Psalm, this psalm is not necessarily a psalm of praise. It's not necessarily a psalm of strong confidence and unwavering faith. In fact, when we study this psalm, we kind of get to see a different side of David's faith. You know, sometimes life hits us out of nowhere, and it really makes us think. You know, it might be maybe the death of a loved one. Maybe, you know, when you see somebody who finds out that they have some sort of terminal illness, such as cancer, or when hospice gets called in for a loved one. And then all of a sudden, things really start to sink in, and all kinds of various thoughts run through our minds. Maybe what the Beatty's just went through, and you know that can you see that, and it's just it's so sad. But it really makes you think. It can make some questions come to mind that maybe you don't think about on an everyday routine, normal sort of day, but yet. Sometimes life happens and it really makes us ask some questions, you know. We don't know for sure when David wrote Psalm 39. From the life of David, there's several times that it could have fit in. It could have been that maybe when David was being chased by King Saul, maybe he didn't know whether he'd lived through the night at some of those times. Maybe it was following the death of one of his children. Maybe it was towards the end of his life when he realized that he was sick and he wasn't going to make it through it, and this was it. I don't know. But those kind of events are the ones that make us sometimes ask some questions. They make some questions come into our mind. You know, why is it that this particular circumstance is happening? Was there anything that I could have possibly done to prevent it? And then when we sit there and we think, well, is there anything I could have possibly done that maybe that makes us look forward and think, well, is there anything I'm supposed to be doing different moving forward? What's the purpose of my life? Especially if we see maybe life, if we're reminded of how short life is, and it hits us at just how brief life is, making us wonder, what is my purpose for my last few days here on earth? One thing that we see from Psalm 39 is, at this point, David doesn't have all the answers. This studying Psalm 39 is not going to be a study of, well, why does God let bad things happen, or why is it that good people suffer and young people die unexpectedly. It's not a study of explaining why those sort of things happen. We're not going to find that in Psalm 39. But by studying Psalm 39, we can see what kind of attitude should a faithful servant of God have when they're facing problems and they don't know the answers to those various questions, such as why, or what is my purpose, or could I have done anything different? You know, when we don't have those answers, because we don't all the time, then how should their faith shape their lives in those kind of situations? That's what we're going to see in Psalm 39. Now, of course, I say, how should Christians react? Now, David wasn't a Christian. David was a faithful follower of God, but Christ wasn't around yet. But in a lot of ways, I think we can see that David was anticipating that God would be faithful, that God would somehow, maybe he didn't know a whole lot about this Messiah that was coming, but he knew that somehow God was going to have an answer. And it's that same answer that David was looking forward to that we're going to be looking back at. And that's the answer that we see on the cross. Now, Psalm 39, it helps me to kind of break it into a few different sections, just to kind of understand how we're going to just kind of follow his thought process as he reveals it to us in this psalm. And to kind of break it into some sections, the first thing we're going to look at is the first three verses. And this is where David is just kind of giving you a little bit of background as to what he's facing. And how David, he's in a tough situation. He doesn't know exactly how to respond. He doesn't know whether he should be, you know, do I need to tell people the kind of questions I'm facing? Or will that end up just bringing reproach on God? Is this something that I just need to handle internally? David doesn't know all the answers. And we see that kind of in verses 1 through 3. Verse 4, through the rest of the psalm, is where David starts to have a few realizations about life. In particular, there's two main perspectives that we're going to look, two different lenses that David will look through as he's viewing these problems. So let's start off, let's read verses 1 through 3. Verses 1 through 3, David's problem. He starts off in verse 1, and David makes a, we don't know what kind of problem he was facing, but verse 1 kind of makes you really respect David's resolve, David's attitude towards dealing with his doubts. Look what he says in verse 1. He says, I said, I will guard my ways, lest I sin with my tongue. I will restrain my mouth with a muzzle while the wicked are before me. David realizes that in his confusion and in his troubles, he's trying to be very careful. He's making a very noble resolve. He's saying, I want to make sure that I'm, even though I'm facing these doubts and I'm facing these questions and maybe I'm a little bit angry at God at this time or whatever it was David was facing, he said, I'm going to keep a muzzle on it. I am not going to go out bad-mouthing God or questioning God, not necessarily bad-mouthing, but he said, I'm going to keep silent while the wicked are before me. You know, and maybe David thought that if I go out there and I start asking publicly, why is God doing this to me? Then maybe David's enemies who wanted to see David removed from the throne, maybe they would have used it as an opportunity to say, to publish David's quote in all the newspapers and say, see, David, the leader of Israel, does not even believe in God. People could have easily twisted those words. His enemies could have used those words against him. And so David, he's made a resolve. He said, I'm just going to keep silent about what I'm thinking. Verse 2, we see that David, not only has he made this resolve that he's not going to sin with his mouth, but he makes a very noble attempt to do just that. To just keep those questions inside by keeping his mouth shut. Verse 2, I was mute with silence. I held my peace even from good, and my sorrow was stirred up. So David he kept quiet. He shut off all communication about the problems that he was facing. Even the good thoughts, to make sure that he didn't accidentally say something that would offend God or cause one of his enemies to somehow take something out of context, David just kept his mouth shut. But, it says, his sorrows grew worse. He was, and this is a little bit of a side topic off of what the main theme of Psalm 39 is, but when I read this, it makes you really respect David. You know, facing such a difficult situation, the resolve he had, he was more concerned with making sure that he protected God's righteous reputation rather than just venting whatever emotions came to mind. And I think there's a lesson even to be learned in just that. You know, sometimes silence is golden. Sometimes I think it is best that we do like David did. And if we're facing different doubts or if we're questioning different things, maybe it's not always the best time to just tell everybody what doubts you're facing. In James chapter 1, verses 19 and 20, James wrote, he said, so then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. You know, when we're facing situations where maybe we're around non-believers and somebody might misunderstand what we're saying when we're talking about our faith, maybe that's not the best time to be talking about different doubts or questions that we're facing. Sometimes it might be better even to just say one word with clarity than it would be to say 500 words and somebody misunderstand what it is that we're really trying to say. You got to respect David here. But at the end of verse 2, we also see the effect that this had on David. His sorrow was stirred up. There is a certain balance we need to seek after when it comes to when we're facing different questions, is it better to talk about them? Or is it better to keep quiet so that we don't cause someone else to be led astray by what we're saying? And, that can be a hard balance to figure out sometimes, but here with David, the effect that his silence had on him, it caused his sorrow to be stirred up. And you read on in verse 3, it says, my heart was hot within me. While I was musing, the fire burned. It's like the more he just keeps quiet, okay, he's doing this for a while, he's making a very noble attempt to uphold this noble resolve of not saying anything, but the effect that it's having on David is these questions that he's dealing with it's like a fire that's just burning hotter and hotter, and he can't hold it inside. And it is tearing David up. And so we see at the end of verse 3, it says, then I spoke with my tongue. He made a very noble attempt, but here, we're about to see what's bothering David so much. Now, and again, to David's credit, I don't think he's airing these grievances before all the Gentile nations all around him. This seems to me to be a prayer between him and God. So as he's dealing with these questions, it is still directed towards God and his confidence in God. But now we get to see what's eating David up. Now, verses 4 through 6, we're going to see... Actually, before we get there, I always like when we're studying the Psalms, I always love to think about Jesus. Because Jesus, he was the fulfillment of the Psalms. And when we see this in David, have you ever wondered how difficult it was for Christ? Like in Matthew chapter 27, verses 12 through 14. While he was being accused by the chief priests and elders, he answered nothing. Then Pilate said to him, "Do you not hear how many things they are testifying against you?" But he answered him not one word, so that the governor marveled greatly. I wonder if Jesus felt like David. When he kept quiet at the cross, that fire that must have been burning his... Do you think that was easy for him just to keep his mouth shut? He was probably, you know, he was human. He was probably going through a million thoughts in his mind saying, "I wish I could say this," but he kept a muzzle on his mouth. And I just thought of that when I was studying through this psalm. But all right, let's start looking at David's perspectives that he takes on his problems. And one thing we can already see is, you know, dealing with problems we don't understand, that's not a foreign idea to the Bible. That's something we see here. So how does David deal with problems that he doesn't understand? The first perspective that David takes on his problems is from the perspective of time. From the perspective of the length of life. If we're thinking about life as a whole, how should we view our problems? He says in verse 4, "Lord, make me to know my end, and what is the measure of my days, that I may know how frail I am." In other words, he's saying, let me know where all this is going, God. I'm not able to see how all this is working together for good. Make me to know my end. What's in store for me? What is my purpose? What do you want me to do here? And from the perspective of time, notice where he goes next. He says, let's see, verse 5, "Indeed, you have made my days as handbreadths." A handbreadth being a measurement that they would use. So, "You have made my days, the measure of my days, the length of my life, this short. My life is only, it's just a handbreadth. And my age is as nothing before you. Certainly every man in his best state, even at the pinnacle of our lives, when our health is good, when everything's going good, and it seems like nothing that can touch us, even at that time, every man at his best state is but vapor, a handbreadth, like a shadow, like a vapor." From the perspective of time, life is short. It's like it's nothing. In the grand scheme of time, your time here on earth, it's here and it's gone. It's like a vapor. It's here just for a moment, but as soon as it's here, it's gone. James actually quoted, in the book of James, this might sound familiar with you because James quoted from Psalm 39. Flip with me over to James chapter 4. James chapter 4. And James here is writing about making sure that we keep a humble attitude before God when it comes to the way we plan our lives. Starting in verse 13. "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a city and spend a year there, buy and sell and make a profit, whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that." If all we're going to view from the perspective of time, From the perspective of how much time you have here on earth, if we're going to view our problems and our questions only from the perspective of our lifetime, it's hard to come up with an answer. You know, what is the measure of our days? What does God really expect us to do with such a short time on earth? Let's read on. What about from the perspective of significance, from the impact that maybe we can have beyond our days? Maybe that'll make a difference. Verse 6. Surely every man walks about like a shadow. Surely they busy themselves in vain. He heaps up riches, and he does not know who will gather them. You know, everybody wants to be able to enjoy some sort of security or stability. And sometimes, you know, sometimes the devil can be very deceitful, and he can make us feel like we found it. You know, maybe you get that promotion, and it makes us feel like, okay, I've got it going for me now. Everything's good. Maybe you get that degree that you've been studying for. Maybe you find a perfect wife like I did. Maybe you buy that new house that you've always that you've been saving up for, and you're on your way to living the American dream, and everything's going good, and that can make you feel secure. But like David, sometimes life surprises us, and all of a sudden it's just like, what does that even matter? Who cares when life is so short, when we're not even promised tomorrow? Who cares whether you got that raise or not? Who cares what kind of house you live in? Those things that make us feel like everything's working out, that make us feel secure, when those problems happen, what difference does that make? It's all an illusion. It's an illusion that Satan might use to distract us from God, but you know, sooner or later, a time's going to come in life when we're going to realize that those things are worthless. That success, it's an illusion. That victory is fleeting. That freedom from problems in life, it's not even a possibility. Any achievement that we get in this life is temporary at best, because sooner or later we're going to pass on and we're going to leave our riches and our successes to somebody else. We don't even know what's going to happen with all that stuff. So from the perspective of time, David didn't really have an answer to his questions. What is my life? From the perspective of significance and the impact he would have, David's kind of left in the same situation. What am I supposed to do? Sooner or later, we all must come to the realization that David comes to if you look down at verse 7. And now, O Lord, what do I wait for? My hope is in you. The third perspective that David takes as he steps back and he realizes how fleeting life is and how insignificant life is. And he thinks about life from the viewpoint of a pilgrim or of a sojourner, of someone who's just passing through with a permanent home waiting for him somewhere else. Look down at verse 12. Hear my prayer, O Lord. Give ear to my cry. Do not be silent at my tears, for I am a stranger with you, a sojourner as all my fathers were. We're only guests here on this earth and in this country at this time. Every blessing we enjoy in life is simply borrowed from God for a short time. Everything we quote-unquote own and have in our bank accounts and have in our possession, it's God's. We're only stewards of the things that God is temporarily lending to us. And when we face those problems and we don't have all the answers, sooner or later, we should be brought down to size and really humble ourselves before God. And these problems, when we face problems that we don't understand and we don't know all the answers, there's really no proper way to ever view those problems unless we decide that we're going to start looking at them through this lens of simply being a sojourner and a pilgrim. If you've ever studied the book of Ecclesiastes, it deals with a lot of these same sort of questions. The preacher or the teacher, he goes around and he's trying to figure out, well, what's going to be the best way to live life? What's going to make a difference? And he tries everything. You know, he tries turning to alcohol. He tries gaining the most wealth. He tries gaining power, property, sexual gratification, entertainment. He turns to hard work. He turns to getting the best possible education, to trying to be wise in this world. And he tries everything. And his answer, he keeps coming back to his vanity of vanity. All is vanity. Until we get to the very end of the book of Ecclesiastes in chapter 12, verses 13 and 14. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. From this perspective, now that David has taken his step back and realized that he's only a pilgrim, he starts to realize what's really important. He still doesn't have all the answers, but notice the nature of his request. Verse 8, deliver me from all my transgressions. Do not make me the reproach of the foolish. From the perspective of a sojourner, now David realizes just how important it is to make sure that his sins are forgiven before God. Life is like a vapor. Soon it'll be gone. And if God really is the only hope we have, it is eternally important to make sure that our sins are forgiven and that our sins have been properly handled so that they will not separate us from God. And David, you know, he realizes what's important here is making sure that God has delivered him from his sins. And again, you know, David, this is when I told you David is looking forward to Christ, all they had at this point was sacrifices of bulls and goats that might roll over sins from year to year, but he was looking forward to Christ. In Hebrews chapter 9, verses 13 through 15, for if the blood of bulls and goats and the ashes of a heifer sprinkling the unclean sanctifies for the purifying of the flesh, how much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to God, cleanse your conscience from dead works, to serve the living God. And for this reason, he is the mediator of a new covenant for the redemption of transgressions under the first covenant, that those who are called may receive the promise of the eternal inheritance. Did you catch that? Jesus was the sacrifice for the old covenant. He was the answer that David is asking for here when he says, deliver me from my sins. So from the perspective of a sojourner, that really puts the problem of sin into perspective. Notice his next request, verses 9 through 11. I was mute. I did not open my mouth because it was you who did it. When wrath rebukes, you correct man for iniquity. You make his beauty melt away like a moth. Surely every man is vapor. David's silent, he's again returning to silence, but not necessarily for the same reason. But now he's remaining silent with a new understanding of who God is and what he's doing. If we're only going to view problems from the perspective of our time here on earth, or from the significance we're going to have here on earth, it can be very difficult to understand what God is doing. But when we step back and look at the big picture, we start to think about, might God be using this as discipline, or as encouragement for me, as a way to remind me to put first things first. And with this new perspective, he realizes that it's God who's ultimately in control. He says, it's you who have done it. So he turns to the one who did it and asking God for mercy. asking God to relieve whatever this was that he was facing. You know, almost everybody in this world, vast majority of people, will place their treasures here on earth. And then when they do that, and when those treasures are gone, they're left heartbroken. But from the perspective of a sojourner, we can remember that maybe there's things we can learn from it, and we can grow closer to God. So first, David asked for forgiveness from his sins. Secondly, David is asking God to give him mercy for whatever it is that he's facing. And then finally, his final request, his highest aim, is found in verses 12 and 13. Hear my prayer, O Lord, and give ear to my cry. Do not be silent at my tears. For I am a stranger with you, a sojourner as all my fathers were. Remove your gaze from me, that I may regain strength before I go away and am no more. David begs that God will hear his prayer. David does not want for God to be silent in response to his prayer. Because David has reached some very important conclusions. Nothing is more important to David than to be able to live out the remainder of his life in a happy relationship with God. In dealing with problems, David starts off this psalm with a lot of questions, a lot of difficulties. Should I talk about it, or should I remain silent? We can, by following Psalm 39, we can see that David slowly moves from problems that he doesn't understand to drawing a few essential conclusions about just how worthless it is to view this life only in terms of this life. And then he finally comes to some very important conclusions. That is, those conclusions being how important it is to make sure that sins are properly dealt with. How important it is to turn to God to be the one who grants us mercy for what we're following. And how important it is to seek after that strong relationship with God. He no longer sees himself as the owner, as the king of Israel. He no longer sees himself as being in control. But now David views himself as a sojourner, just passing through. Everybody in this room, at some point, we need to go through this same realization. At some point, we must be willing to remind ourselves and to put it in the forefront of our minds just how short and insignificant earthly successes are. And then to come to the conclusion that nothing matters but our relationship with God. Psalm 39 ends with kind of a weird request. He says, remove your gaze from me. You know, normally, most of the time when we read prayers, we read that someone will ask, well, God, look upon me and my problems. But what he's talking about here, he's talking about the gaze of, he's saying, remove your gaze from me, the gaze of discipline that David was facing, the hardships that God was placing upon him. He's saying, remove your anger from me. Stop gazing at my imperfections and at my sins so that I may regain strength. When David faced problems he didn't understand, the only thing that would please him was to be able to walk with God the final days of his life. David looked forward to the cross. And you know, in many ways, when Jesus hung on the cross, he was looking back toward Psalm 39 as the fulfillment of those requests that David had. Through the cross, we have forgiveness. Through the cross, we're reminded that even though life is very brief, we are a sojourner. We are going to arise and live it in eternity with God. And when facing problems we don't understand, let's always remember, let's look back to Psalm 39. And let's look back to Jesus on the cross. 1 John chapter 4, verse 10. In this is love. Not that we loved God, that He loved us and sent His Son to be the propitiation for our sins. Ephesians chapter 1, verse 7. In Him we have redemption through His blood, the forgiveness of sins, according to the riches of His grace. Romans chapter 6, verse 4. Therefore we were buried with Him through baptism into death, that just as Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we also should walk in newness of life. We don't have all the answers, but when we face problems here on earth, we can be reminded that there is a greater home waiting for us in eternity. Have your sins been properly dealt with? Are they forgiven? Have you had your sins washed away in baptism? And have you been living faithfully towards God? If you need to have your transgressions dealt with, would you come this evening while we stand and while we sing?